Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. I am Lee Cantor, and I am joined in the studio with Mr. Stone Payton and Mr. Trevor Wolford.
Good afternoon, sir. This is going to be fun working with Trevor, huh?
I know. I'm excited. This is the first time for me working with Trevor. Yeah. I don't know how good he is.
This is my debut, guys.
A little nervous. But we have a great show today. Today is the initial installment of the thing we've been talking about for a long time, Stone.
Well, you and I, we like food so much.
Yes.
And so having this inside series where we get a chance to look behind the scenes at all aspects of bringing food to your table, this is going to be a great segment. Today we're going to visit with, from the Le Cordon Bleu College of Culinary Arts, Chef Jay Gruber and Chef Kyle Reynolds. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
We are delighted to have you. So typically, if you weren't doing a radio show right now, would you be working, doing prep things in the kitchen right now? Would you be teaching classes? What is a day in the life of an instructional chef? Is that the right term?
Yes.
Give us a little bit of, let's start with you, Chef Jay. A day in the life of Chef Jay, how does your day look?
Busy. Wow, very, very busy. I spend a lot of time at the school, and my day begins pretty much whenever the first meeting begins in the day, which can mean anywhere from 10:30 in the morning to, you know, normally I get there somewhere between 1 and 2 in the afternoon, and normally I leave about 11 o'clock at night.
Wow.
So I'm never bored. I'm never bored, and it's a busy school. We have 1,000 students there now. We have 4 different shifts. We have a couple different programs, and we have 36 to 40 instructors at any given time. So it's a lot to keep up with.
Now, what is the objective of the school? Is it to get a novice, someone who has no skills or clue about the culinary arts, to becoming a chef or to work in the restaurant or hospitality business?
Well, we've got the whole combo platter there, as I like to say. We have everything from the person that may want to come in and learn patisserie and open their own bakery as a hobby when they retire, to somebody, you know, that wants to make a career of it straight out of high school. So there is really no average student range of age. You can range from, you know, like I said, right out of high school, and then somebody, you know, as old as 60 or 70 might enroll.
Oh, so it could be somebody that just has a passion for cooking food and wants to learn more, or maybe have like a second career that in the culinary arts and have their own business.
Absolutely, there's a lot of career changers, and that's typically the older student, of course. And then we have some other people that have been in the industry for years, and they found that they wanted to tweak their training and or get more knowledge in a different area, perhaps maybe patisserie rather than cuisine or something.
Now, at the very top of your field, I'm operating under the impression there's quite a bit of money to be made. But what about median income? Is this a pretty good, solid path for someone to be a chef at a decent restaurant? Is it a good living once you learn your craft?
Well, it depends what you do and how hard you work. That's what I always say, and I think that's true of every profession. And there's a lot of different ranges, but the thing is that it can go into so many different fields. There's certainly a lot more opportunities than when I graduated from culinary school. Everything from a restaurant, a small privately owned restaurant, a big chain restaurant, hotels, cruise ships, country clubs, medical field, assisted living centers is going to be a very big market.
What about private chef like Lee has? That's a good gig, isn't it?
I'd like to have one.
So, Trevor, you could be a private chef. You're all over this food thing, and you're not very thick for someone who enjoys food as much as you do. How do you enjoy so much food and remain so slim? That's a whole other show.
You know, I've got a good metabolism. I think that's what I've got going for me.
Yeah, so. Lucky you. I wish I had that.
So we introduced you both, Chef Kyle and Chef Jay, and we used the term chef, but that's not something you throw around lightly. You got to jump through some hoops before you can be called that, right, Kyle?
Absolutely. I mean, it's not like you enroll in the school and you graduate and you're automatically granted the chef status. You know,
I thought you just have to buy that white shirt you guys wear.
the pepper pants, yeah.
I mean, you can, you know, just print a little plaque and put it on your door, sure, but I think it takes a number of years to earn those credentials. You know, you really need to work hard and earn the respect of your colleagues and develop a lot of skills in a number of different areas. I mean, being a chef, you know, requires you to wear many hats other than just the toque. But, you know, you need to learn how to cook. You need to learn how to lead a team and generate profit.
Now, do you guys ever have to turn anybody down? Is anyone just can't cook?
You have to say, you're out of here.
Well, we do have an entrance exam that they have to take to get into the school. But, I mean, they're not there to already know how to cook, or we would serve no purpose.
Sure.
But I think anybody, you know, some people have natural gifts. Some people, as they say, it's in them. And some people need to work on developing a little bit more, and that's fine. That's what we're there for.
Well, and isn't it true that a little bit of pork fat makes just about everything better?
You better believe it. Oh, yes.
See, I know some
Ask
of these
any
secrets.
Instructor, yeah.
Fat is flavor.
And exactly.
Pork fat is certainly a good one.
So does that mean he's a chef now?
I'm on my way. But to Trevor's point, though, do you ever get people that come in, and because they do enjoy food, or they do enjoy cooking with their spouse, and friends and family tell them, oh, you're such a great cook, and they think they want to be a chef. But then they get in there, and there's some real work associated with it, and they think, this is not fun anymore. I don't think I really want this. Does that happen?
Oh, well, yeah, frequently, and I'm sure Kyle can elaborate on this as well. But, you know, the different cooking shows on TV have been both a blessing and a curse for our profession. And, you know, I think it's elevated the profession, but by the same token, it's also made it look easier than it actually is. So it's a lot of physical labor, a lot of time on your feet, a lot of long hours, a lot of holidays spent working, time away from family. And yeah, that's something really people need to think about.
Now, do you have to know how to chop that quickly? How important is that skill?
And I want to tell all our listeners, both chefs today have all their fingers.
Yeah.
Some of them have
grown
back.
That's not always the case.
Well, we emphasize accuracy and consistency first, and speed will come with time.
Because some on TV, man, those guys move like they're machines.
Well, when you've prepped that many things for, you know, probably hundreds of pounds of things over the years, yeah, eventually you get both accurate and proficient.
So accuracy and consistency. Are you saying that when you're cutting up a carrot, you want all the slices to be the same width and that kind of thing? Is that what you're talking about?
That would be ideal.
Really?
You know, so that it looks...
never even occurred to me.
Did you know that, Trevor? Did you know you shoot for every slice the same?
I usually just get it in my mouth as quick as possible. I don't...
You know, not every carrot has the same shape, the same length, right, the same width. So the first thing we do is, you know, you pick it up and you cut it into, you know, a consistent dimension. And it's for a number of reasons. One, for aesthetics, you know, so that it looks nice. You want it to look very, very pretty on the plate and attractive to the consumer. You know, you got to start there if you want to convince somebody to eat it. And then secondly, you know, when you cook it, you want it to cook evenly. So, you know, if you have different size cuts, you know, one's four times bigger than the other. If you cook all of these the same amount of time, one's going to be mush and one's going to be crunchy.
Oh, that's a good point.
See that? So, man, you learn everything in this.
So how important is it to know where your food comes from? If you're a chef, you don't have time to fool with that, do you? Just as long as you know it's across the walkway in the freezer, you're good, right?
Well, not really. I mean, we both have very strong feelings on it, as many chefs do. And I think it probably varies depending on the person and their particular knowledge. But for me and for many of the chefs at Le Cordon Bleu, it's extremely important, because we realize that the more that you know about your food, the more nutritious can be for the customer, the easier it makes our job, because the less you have to do to the food, that's fantastic. You don't have to cover it up with flavors. You can just bring out what's already there. Chef, what do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a number of reasons why I want to know where my food comes from. But, I mean, if you boil it down to any one thing, I think one that's really attractive to a lot of consumers and chefs as well is that, you know, flavor. Chefs don't actually create flavor. What chefs do is, you know, we combine flavors. So we rely on those farmers to create flavors. And farmers, you know, they can emphasize, you know, low-cost products, you know, and they can try to grow the cheapest things possible, or they can try to grow the most flavorful things possible. So knowing where our food comes from and the process that went into it, you know, I think helps us to select, you know, higher quality products that have more flavor. You know, you know it's kind of difficult to start with some flavorless produce and try to turn it into something garbage in, garbage out, you know. So.
Now, does that mean like kind of researching the local farms and getting to know the actual farmers and to see what the ground looks like? And
absolutely. Absolutely.
That's a chef's responsibility?
Responsibility if they are that type of chef that is interested in that.
And it's good B-roll for the cooking show.
Right.
Like to go out to the farm and visit with Johnny Billy and, you know.
So that really happens, though? The chefs are actually going and meeting the farmers?
Sure,
So you know, Kyle, you know some farmers.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I remember.
What are their names?
I know Alice Waters of Chez Panisse in San Francisco. She said that 90% of a chef's skill should be in foraging. So that means that you need to be really, really focused and emphasizing on finding the highest quality products. So, I mean, I go to farmers markets. That's typically what I do. And I'm not talking about the farmers markets, grocery stores. I'm talking about, like, outside certified farmers markets where...
So not even the ones that go to the different neighborhoods? Like, there's...
Yeah.
Yes, that's exactly it. Yes.
Yeah, you've got a... Probably it's going to be in a parking lot.
Right.
And, you know, the farmer is going to be selling the products that he grew. And I walk around and I take a look at what's going on. I look at the prices. I look at how things look visually. If there's samples, I'll go by and sample things. And if I find a farmer that I really like a particular product, you know, I'll keep going back to that farmer.
So you'll just get beets from one guy and then tomatoes from somebody else.
He's got a beet guy, right?
You have a beet guy? Right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's great.
You know, there's a lot of different kinds of beets, too, you know. So, I mean, it depends on what you're looking for. You know, you're looking
But how do you spend all this time and still get the meal out on the table?
Because he can cut faster than you can.
Well, that's make it up in the cutting.
I think it all just comes down to what your cooking philosophy is. You know, where are you going to spend your time? You know, if you're going to prepare a meal, you know, you can pull a Hot Pocket out of the freezer or go to McDonald's, or you can invest some time and energy into it. So, you know, if you spend a little bit more time trying to find higher quality products, you know, I think it pays off in the end.
I absolutely agree. Yeah, I love to go to farmers markets, too. And, you know, you get to see so many things, and I pretty much approach it the same way. What do you have today? We walk around. Sometimes they'll give you a sample. And then you just sort of decide from there, and you get to have your favorite farmers markets, maybe depending on location. Some of my favorite farmers markets are very far away, but it's worth it to go. And they have a lot of other things besides produce. They have things like flowers and, you know, handmade soaps, and it's interesting. And then once you get to know the farmers, you know, Kyle and I have been out to a couple of farms to support them when they've had events and things like that. So it's just, it's a different experience of flavor. And some chefs now are even holding dinners right on farms themselves. You know, they pick the food and they
cook it
right out of the ground.
Do you have those addresses?
Now, Trevor, when he goes to a restaurant and he enjoys a meal, he likes
he's
to
very
ask,
picky.
He is very picky. Well, you see how he's not very thick. Right. You got to fatten him up.
He grew up in Brevard. You know where that is? Yeah. It's like some farm country in another state.
It's out there.
But when he enjoys a meal, he likes to talk to the chef. He wants to speak to is that annoying, or do you appreciate that and enjoy that when they want to talk to the chef?
I loved it. When I was in restaurants, you know, I think it's a chef's responsibility to go out to the dining room to talk to the customers and listen to what they have to say. I mean, that's your client. Chefs, I don't believe, should be cooking and trying to educate the public because they're only kidding themselves. they have to work with where the public is and then bring them on board with other things and say, do you like this? Do you like that? Fortunately, a lot of the consumer market is now sort of trending towards more farm-to-table cuisine, and we're happy to see that.
Right, that's a good thing for everybody, right? Isn't it healthier, more nutrition? You know, you're getting stuff not in a can or in a bag. It's stuff that just came out of the ground recently.
Mm-hmm. Is it weird for someone to ask you where that chicken came from? Or
no, not at all. As a matter of fact, what you generally see now on a lot of menus is the chefs giving the particular farm that they got it from credit right on the menu, which I think is great. But
see that in a lot of grocery stores now, too.
Yes, right?
The story behind this animal, this tomato.
Right, correct.
So the same thing that's happening with the vegetables is happening with the meats as well?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And what they eat.
Right. Now, you guys
free range.
Cooking and teaching in a school environment. So where's all the cooked food going? Are the students eating everything they cook? How's that work? You got some pretty
Do you have a gym associated with this?
Yes, they do eat what they cook, sometimes with the patisserie especially. I mean, you know, you can't just make one Danish. You have to make a lot of Danish, you know. And so we will save their cookies or whatever. So we'll save that, and we'll use that for our open houses, some of the breads. Kyle's doing bread classes lately, and he sends a lot of his breads to our restaurant At the school. And
now, is that your sweet spot, Kyle? Are you the bread patisserie type guy?
It's one of my favorite things to do. I like to make breads. Yeah, I could do that all day.
He's pretty much, he's good at everything. He's good at cuisine he's good at patisserie.
There's a restaurant at the Le Cordon Bleu?
There is. It's
open to the public?
Yes, that's right. It's called Technique.
Did you know this?
Did not know this. Did you know this, Trevor?
I did not. I need to go.
Yeah, what are you waiting for? Yeah. Hurry. Come on down.
Do you have to make reservations?
You do. You can make reservations on opentable.com. We are open Tuesday through Friday for lunch and also for dinner. And Monday we're not open, obviously.
And the weekend you're not open?
No, we're not.
But this would be a good date night in the middle of the week with your wife.
Yes, it is. And it's a bargain, too. You get, you know, multiple courses for a very, very low price.
And you're getting the really good stuff.
Absolutely. You know, the lunch and dinner menu are different. And at night, we do have, you know, lamb loin, tenderloin, osso buco, you know, salmon. You know, it's incredible, and we have some great salads and sandwiches at
lunch.
Are
these the beginner chefs or like the advanced chefs?
These are the
What day is the advanced chefs?
Well, we have two instructors in there. We have, you know, a front of the house and back of the house instructor, because it is important that they understand service as well. We want them to be as well-rounded as possible. So these are the students in the restaurant that are just about to go out on their externship. So they've been through the whole program. Yeah.
So if you were in my kitchen, my wife and I love to cook together, and we have a nice big kitchen. Well, you were just in a house the other day
with a
big
mansion.
Oh, really?
It's not, but we have a nice kitchen, and we have a nice big island granite thing in the middle, plenty of room to do whatever you want to do. And Holly and I have no formal education whatsoever. What are some mistakes that a Holly and Stone would make in the kitchen that the minute you walked in, you'd say, "Oh, these two don't have a clue," that are just little simple things that if we knew about them, you know, maybe our meals would turn out better.
Sanitation is always huge.
So fewer sick guests. That's always a nice
benefit. That's why everyone has a stomach problem at your house. It's weird.
I often see people, like if you're going to sear something off, you know, you just take the steak right out of the package, or you're going to sear a chicken breast, and, you know, just take it right out of the package.
What do you do?
Well, there's a number of things you could do and should do. I think the first thing you should do is that you should dry the surface of the product off before you sear it.
Really?
Right. Huh. It helps prevent it from sticking and will help to give it a much better crust.
What about if you marinated it?
Same thing. And that's the other thing that I would say that you could do, right, is add some flavor to it. You know, you can marinate it, brine it, something like that. And that takes a little bit of an advanced planning, you know.
But even if if you marinate it, you're saying once you marinate it, pull it out and like pat it with a paper towel type thing.
Yeah, and if your marinade's got like a lot of sugar or something in it, you probably want to rinse some of that off of the surface.
Wow.
So that it doesn't brown too fast. But either way, I mean, you need to dry it off.
Like dry.
Yeah, I take paper
towel.
I take a paper towel. tacky, not, you know, bone dry. I usually take, you know, some paper towels and, you know, just pat it on both sides and season it. And then I'll let it sit on the paper towels while I'm warming up the pan. And, of course, you know, make sure that the presentation side is the side that's down on the paper towel. You know, that's the first side that's going to go into the pan. So, like, if you're searing a skin on chicken breast, you want the skin side. It's going to be the prettiest side.
Right.
So you put that down on the paper towel, get it nice and dry, get your pan really hot with some nice oil or clarified butter, whatever you're using, and then put it right into the
pan. And that's another tip is you always have a hot thing you're cooking on. Don't just throw it on there and let it heat up as it goes.
The saute method requires that you heat the pan first, then you heat the oil in the pan. And the purpose is so that it rises on top of the oil and the oil doesn't soak.
All the cooking shows, they always do that. They're always heating their
pan. They're already ready. And they say clarified butter. What's clarified butter?
Clarified butter. Well, butter is an emulsion. It's made of liquid water and milk solids, and there's a little bit of dairy sugar in there, lactose, and the fat itself. So clarified butter is a process of separating the emulsion and extracting just the fat.
How long do you put it in the microwave to make this happen?
You can do it in the microwave. Really? Yeah. See, it's there? Okay. Yeah, I mean, basically, you need to melt it until it separates. And, I mean, usually in a kitchen, you know, we would do it over a stovetop, and we would ladle the solids and the fat off so that we can separate them.
And but you throw it away?
Can do the microwave.
You can use it for something else.
You can use it for something else. Some bakers will put it into the bread, you know.
But do you have that little mason jar of bacon grease?
Oh,
grease?
You better believe
it. I put that in my Cheerios, man. I put that in everything.
That's right. Yeah, rub it on your face, whatever. Yeah.
I have lard. I have chicken fat. I have clarified, but I have like a little mason jar, mason jar of everything in the refrigerator.
Every time
I cook something, right, it's all there.
Exactly.
How important is the cooking thermometers? Because you seem to carry one with you wherever you go here.
Is a requirement as a professional chef. You know, when you're in the kitchen, you have to have it on.
Right,
you.
But even when you're driving a car, you're ready to go.
Yeah, I'm ready to go.
Okay, it's like your passenger seems to be, their temperature may not be right. You're just like jabbing in the thigh.
Is that baby got a fever? Let's check. Right. But you always want to have it at the ready because, we use them constantly.
You use them constantly. Do you ever use one? I never use one.
Never.
Can't you tell by looking at it?
You guys need to get out more.
The Peyton recipe is on the turkey, I think it's 20 minutes per pound. But we don't look at the thermometer.
Yeah, just wait till that little plastic thing goes.
Right,
boop,
pops out. Right.
And we have like one cutting board, so it's the same board with the chicken and the vegetables. So that's not good, right? I have an iron stomach. But
you are building up some immunities for sure.
How often do you check the temperature of something? Once? Or is that thing's poked 50 times?
You don't want to poke it too many times. But, it depends on what I'm making. I use it a lot. This past week, I've been making a lot of breads in class, and some of them are very dense and kind of difficult to tell exactly when they're done. So I teach the students to check for the temperature. I'll check the bread maybe once, towards the end of baking to see where it's at, and then I can gauge, this needs another 5-10 minutes.
Right.
And,
so are students hard-headed?
Never.
No, you watch that show where the guy gets so pissed off at him all the time.
Right, he's always yelling.
So you get the sense that a lot of food students are just hard-headed.
I think one of the prerequisites for being a chef instructor is that you're very patient. So
so that guy wouldn't make it as an instructor?
No,
your school?
He'd get fired. I don't think he'd make it past the interview.
No, probably not.
When instructors interview at the school, other instructors will heckle them and try to be the bad student and get them right. Up. So,
he'll react under pressure.
Yeah. Probably wouldn't make it.
Now, in real life, do the chefs yell at you?
Depends where
some
you go.
Some do. Some do.
Depends where you go. I think a lot of that's changing. That was very old school. It was way a lot of us instructors went through for sure. And it's not necessarily the most effective method of motivating an individual. there are definitely other ways to do it. But, the reality is there's still some situations like that are out there. And a lot of times when chefs yell, it's the heat of the moment. The ticket machine is running and you're with a lot of fire and knives and sweating and everything else. And it just, it's just the heat of the moment. At the end of the night or end of the day, everybody understands that they give each other a pat on the back and we're all on the same team.
Nothing personal.
Right.
Now, do you guys get in on all the tipping that goes on in the front of the house? How's that work?
No. Rarely.
Not that you're doing all the work. They're out there just handing food to people and they keep all the money? What is that about?
Well, you gotta love what you do.
Doesn't seem fair. So the waiters can make more money than the chefs?
It's possible.
It's possible.
It's not always the case. Certainly there are plenty of chefs who make a lot more money than anyone else in the restaurant, maybe even the owner. But
So they don't feel obligated to throw you any money?
Occasionally, a big party, sometimes on a catered event. Mm-hmm. They'll factor in the chef, but
so you get a flat fee, whatever your rate is, that's what you get paid.
It's not the standard here in the U.S. to tip the cooks. And some kind of, like in Europe, I understand that they do that a lot.
So a lot of your chefs move to Europe.
It's not all about the money. We get paid enough, and
really?
We do what we do because we love what we do.
Absolutely.
So if, as a student over there at your place, do you have to be all in, or is there sort of like this, casual version of...
Like a hobbyist.
Hobby class?
Just want to be good at this?
Well, there is now for the general public, for somebody who doesn't want to commit themselves to, a certificate or a degree program, they just want to learn how to, let's say, like Kyle, make breads, right? So we have a MasterChef series courses that the public can sign up for. It's on chef.edu, and you just look up our Atlanta location. It will tell you all these different courses that you can sign up for on a Saturday, and you just go in and make whatever you want with the chef. They provide you with the supplies, the materials, the the aprons, the whole nine yard, and it's a lot of fun.
So that's another fun day. I'm trying to help you out with Abby.
I appreciate that. That's a great idea. Oh. Now, do you have one where you take me to the farmer's market and help me shop?
Oh, that would be cool.
Yeah, that's a great idea. We should do that.
What is the go-to recipe that you guys pull out of your pocket when you have a hot date or you're trying to impress,
Kyle breaks out the bread.
Is it the bread?
I always do fresh bread. I always do. And I try to have it coming out of the oven, moments before everyone's walking in the door.
Sure,
so that you really, when the door opens, you get hit with that aroma.
Right.
What about olive oil? Do you do that Dunkin' olive oil thing? Because that stones go to.
Depends on which kind of bread I'm making. I think I'm probably more partial to butter on fresh bread. But I do love olive oil.
I'll drag an oatmeal raisin cookie through olive oil. I love olive oil.
I did too.
Yeah.
You see Kyle's face when I say that?
Yeah.
I was exaggerating, but I really do like bread with olive oil. But there's a big difference in just your cheap Charlie $4 bottle olive oil, and then the top. It's like wine.
Yeah.
There's like the top shelf at Kroger, and then there's
Is that true? You buying that?
Yeah. No. Well, there's
is that
top
marketing?
Tier.
Is there marketing there?
There's
that
top
real
tier for sure. No. There. I love. As a matter of fact, there are some restaurants that actually do olive oil tastings, and I'll order that as a dessert. Yeah, because I love olive oil so much, because I love all the different aromas. I love looking at all the different colors.
Where is that place that does that olive oil tasting?
I'll tell you on the side.
You should try my olive oil ice cream.
Yeah, that is pretty swinging.
Are you serious?
Oh, yeah. Very, very good.
Because I got to be honest with you, it doesn't sound very appetizing.
No.
It's unusual, but it is amazing. It's
swinging. Along with the, was that you or one of your students made the bacon and egg ice cream? That was delicious.
Yeah.
Did you ever do that? Like a student comes up with a great dish and you tell them, nah, that'll never work.
And then next semester.
We try not to discourage their creativity, but help them develop a creative process. So I tell the students, go ahead and try it. Okay. And you try it yourself, after you make it, and I'll try it. I'll give you my opinion. And then you let several other people taste it as well, and then we'll see where we're at from there. So, and then usually they sort of figure it out, whether this is something they should continue with or they should change, modify. So do
some students come out, emerge with, man, they're just really good at the seafood thing. They just absolutely got it nailed. Do people have a tendency to emerge with some real strengths in some areas, and that's what they lead with?
Yeah, I think everybody has to start somewhere. Some people are very good, in a kind of saute method. Some people are very good at sauces. Some people are very good at soups. And I think, you start somewhere and then you develop over time and you start to branch out and you start to get more confidence and you start to get more knowledge, and that's going to make all the difference.
And you start doing things like putting olive oil in with ice
absolutely
cream.
Absolutely. Exactly.
That's not confidence. That's cocky is what that is. And it worked. That's great.
So when do you guys start using the flames? Is that the last class?
They get open flame in the second class.
Yeah.
What about the real sharp knives? When do you let them touch the real sharp knives?
First class.
Sharp is less dangerous than dull, right? Because that's
it's better to get a nice clean cut than a jagged cut for sure.
Right.
But they get.
How about no cut? Where do you have to go for no cut?
Well, I like to alternate my cuts and burns. Burns are less messy, of course, but. No, actually, the first week in school, they get their knives, and they
do you
are
give them, or like is that a personal thing? You have your own knives.
That's like having your own queue, like your own
is
pool
it
queue, right?
You have your own personal knives.
Well, that's something again that you get over time, because you have to pick out your own. You have to decide on the weight, and what fits right in your hand and what kind of brand.
They have the
you
right
like
balance, and you got to have the harvested from the Ivory Coast handle.
Absolutely, yes, absolutely. No, they get a toolkit, and then the instructor goes through the toolkit with them, and of course they are instructed on how to properly use their knives.
Wow. So you have your own knives, Kyle?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What about spatula? You have your own spatula?
Yeah, I have.
It has a big K on it. He has his own line of culinary stuff.
Yeah, I have lots of spatulas.
Whisk? You have your own whisk?
Whisk, I have a dozen whisks. Different shapes and sizes.
No, does chefs get mad, though? Like, if you're using my whisk, that's...
When
I go hunting, I don't want you messing with my gun.
It's true. I had a line cook at one time who said, don't touch my tongs.
Yeah.
He had a particular kind of tongs that he liked, and he was very protective of them.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Knives, I can understand, because sometimes people will pick up your knife, that you have sharpened.
And your knife
so
would be like 500
razor
bucks,
sharp,
right?
And then they start cutting like the marble table.
You're
or
opening
something
a box with it. That'll give you a stroke.
Right.
So what about getting kids interested and involved in cooking? Anything going on over there at your shop in that regard? Or do you have any advice for parents that might want to really encourage that when they see a little bit of interest?
Well, Kyle has several sons.
Yeah. I have two boys. I have a 7-year-old and I have a 1-year-old. 1-year-old, haven't gotten him too involved in the kitchen yet.
Can he crack an egg?
Not yet.
Well, on purpose. Can he crack one on purpose?
Oh yeah. Accidentally, he can do. Cell phones, everything. He's good at that. But the 7-year-old, I've had him involved probably in the kitchen probably since he's about 1.5. First job I gave him was picking basil. And then we slowly progressed from there. But today I had him make baguettes in the morning.
Wow! Is he teaching your class now while you're here?
He could. He has walked in my classrooms before and instructed the class. On one particular thing. But he's very, very good, and he loves exploring in the kitchen. But one of the things that I found, obviously, I like to use him in the kitchen because he helps me. He helps me get lunch or dinner on the table. But also, he really enjoys it, and I find that he's more likely to eat things if he was involved in the process. So, like, getting him to eat vegetables, for example, I wanted him to eat everything. I didn't want him to, I don't like collard greens, for example. So I found that if he planted the collard greens and, weeded the garden and, made sure it was growing. I mean, he started eating this stuff raw out of the garden. And then I'd say, okay, hey, let's cook those collard greens that we grew. And he'll go out in the garden and he'll pick them and we'll bring them in the house. And I'll show him how to use the knife and he'll cut them up. And then we'll put them in the pan. He'll saute them. And then he will eat a lot more of them than he would have if I made it and put it on the plate for him, if we went to a restaurant and ordered it.
You have to have a lot of patience for that, because it takes like 3 or 4 months to grow them. And have to pre-plan for a few months for this.
No, that's perfect. Though. What spouses, significant others, are they intimidated they don't get in the kitchen? Do they play too?
My wife hates cooking, so she's very, very happy.
So that's why she married a chef.
My boyfriend's he's my best sous chef ever. He's a great prep cook, and he's from Louisiana, so he does a lot of great Louisiana cooking himself. It's a good team.
When's Louisiana Day for lunch there?
Well, probably this coming Tuesday.
We should have Creole Day here, right? Right. Invite them back. Absolutely.
It would dump a bucket of crawfish here on the table.
There you go. Works for me.
Absolutely. We were talking about a little bit some of the common mistakes people make at home, and to get back, to the farm-to-table concept, I think it's in selecting your product in the first place, don't you? I mean,
Yeah.
I mean, I see that a lot. I mean, people just, sometimes I see people at the store and they'll just grab a handful of beans and put them in a bag and put them in their cart, and they haven't really even looked at them. Mm-hmm. They haven't even smelled the product to see if it's ripe. And I think that's the beginning of starting to select better things at home.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you go bean by bean.
I did.
Putting them in the bag.
Yes.
Yeah.
One at a time.
Correct.
This is not like throwing together a dish at Hamburger Helper, man. This is serious business. This is your family you're cooking for. It
seems like a lot of work. There's a lot of good restaurants here. Did you know that?
That's what I hear, yeah.
Now, do you guys have your go-to farmers markets, a couple that you would recommend for our listeners?
Yeah. Well, there's farmers markets all over town. The first thing I would say is head over to georgiaorganics.org's website.
Yes, absolutely.
And, are they having a big event coming up?
In March they have their annual conference.
Right.
Sweet.
The Georgia Organics is a wonderful organization. I've been to their conference. It's a good time. A lot of great food and opportunity to meet lots of farmers from all across the country, in particular, from this region. But Georgia Organics has a local food directory on their website.
Oh,
so,
nice.
I mean, I would say probably no matter what you're looking for, you can find it there. So if you're looking for meat, you're looking for dairy, you're looking for eggs, you're looking for produce, if you want to find a restaurant that emphasizes local food, you can find a list there. If you want to find farmers markets, they have them broken down by county all across Georgia. And I could certainly recommend some that are bigger here in the Atlanta area, but I have my favorites, which are closer to my house.
To your house, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah, I used to go quite frequently to the Morningside Farmers Market, and that's pretty well known in the Atlanta area. It's great, but you have to get there early because
when they get there, because all the good stuff is gone.
They're going to sell out very quickly. But I live in Decula, and so My goal is to explore some more that I have opened up there recently. And just wherever I see a new one, I like to go to support them.
Or if you like bargains, show up at the farmer's market late. And, you know,
and they're, when they're ready to pack up and they are ready to go,
And should you wear a chef shirt so people think you know what you're looking at and don't try to cheat you or something?
Is that a universal discount if I wear a chef shirt?
I try not to wear a chef jacket to the farmer's market because one of the things happening, I'll have a very difficult time shopping because everybody will be asking
me some questions. Everybody asks the questions.
What is this? How do I cook this?
Right,
that, would be that would be a reason for us to do it, though. Right, that would be fun.
Yeah, you could tell them anything.
Exactly. So before we let you go, let's make sure that our listeners know how to get in touch with you guys, learn more about Le Cordon Bleu, look at some opportunities for perhaps education or maybe hang out at this restaurant.
Because it seems like there's education if you want to be a serious chef, if you want to just be a weekend warrior, and if you want to get your kids into this, there's something for everybody, right?
Yeah, there really is, and it's a great campus. We are very lucky. I like to call it the Taj Mahal because we have such extraordinary kitchens. We have amazing instructors. We're in a great, office park location. And technique, our restaurant is very good. So, to me, you can't go wrong. And like you said, if you are just into just doing something different on a Saturday or buying a nice, gift for somebody for their birthday, something unusual, that may be the way to go. You can go to chefs.edu and look up the Atlanta location or any one of our locations for that matter.
Look, Trevor, did you learn anything, man?
I'm hungry. I'm excited to check out the restaurant. I'm very excited.
Well, happy to have you there anytime. And if you come down to the restaurant, gentlemen will be happy to give you a tour of the school.
All right, cool. Great.
You're on.
Well, that wraps up another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. This is our Farm to Table edition, and we will see you all next time.